Howdy friends, Mark is here welcoming you back to the Founders Forge podcast. Here on the Founders Forge, we talk to founders from all stages to get to know them, their projects, and the lessons they've learned along the way. Today, Owen and I are talking to Allison Gorman, founder of TrueFaves. This is a great conversation about the woes of becoming a software founder without any technical background. Allison talks through the whole process, from finding freelance developers, to pitching, to eventually partnering with an accelerator to launch and relaunch a beta. All right. Now on to Allison Gorman from TrueFaves.
Allison, great to have you joining us.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me on your podcast.
Absolutely. So tell us a little bit about TrueFaves.
TrueFaves. It gives people an easier way to swap recommendations in a more private fashion. The easiest way to describe it would be to say that it's the positive side of Yelp shared privately with a trusted group, your most trusted sources of friends and family. And the whole idea came about, I wasn't like searching for this idea, but it kind of came about and really just kind of took a hold. I was in New York City about 5 years ago visiting friends, and we were all out, and women do this all the time, but we were out and we were just kind of raving about the things that we love, whether it was like a new fitness class, a skincare line, a book that we just read. So we're all kind of swapping those recommendations. And then the next morning when all of us went to leave, we actually took out our phones and we just went to the notes section and we're writing out all these details like, okay, wait, what was that fitness studio and like which class and who do you like? And, you know, days later, we were still following up with each other, asking like those follow-up questions, like, what was that book again? And so anyway, so at first we decided that we were going to create, and we realized we do this all the time with our group of friends and family. So we were going to create an app just for ourselves. When we started sharing the idea with, you know, our friends and, you know, husbands, boyfriends, you know, they're like, do you know how much it costs to create an app? And we're like, no, I don't. Anyway, and then my friend's husband was like, well, why don't you look and see if you can kind of create a business around it and see if there's some way to monetize it. And it just kind of kicked off we just started thinking about it. We're like, oh, this could be something. And then it's honestly, it kind of took on a life of its own after that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so you've had the idea 5 years ago. And honestly, you were probably, you know, when we talk to people as far as like actually acting on the idea, it sounds like basically that day you're like, hey, let's do this for ourselves. Like, let's solve this problem for ourselves. But then, you know, what comes after that and how far do you go with an idea before you actually, you know, try to make it into a business? And I guess I think one of my questions is, is that something that, you know, you found yourself doing that with these other people? Is that something that other, you know, friends or people that you knew talked about doing as well, being like, man, I wish I had an easy way to share XYZ with a friend?
When we started asking friends and family, and we actually kind of did our own little research, and we were just taking screenshots of every time someone texted us or sent us an email or a Facebook message asking for a certain recommendation, or, you know, taking a picture of some kind of fitness equipment and be like, oh my God, you guys have to try this. We started screenshotting how many times this happens in our lives. And yeah, people do it all the time. I'll be honest in saying like, yes, this idea kind of took hold 5 years ago. But when we started to do our research and we did realize like, it's a lot that goes into developing an app. And it is a lot of money. This is 5 years ago. So it was even more money then. And so we all have full-time jobs. They both had children at the time. I didn't then, but, we were, you know, setting up all these meetings, at nighttime, and probably about 6 months into it, as we're doing our research, maybe a year into it, my two friends were like, Allie, we love the idea. We want it to keep going, but we just don't have the time. I was so super passionate about it that I didn't want to give it up. In the same sense, I was like, I don't know that I can do this by myself. So I did actually table it for a little while, and then it kept coming up. I would keep getting those texts, like asking me for a recommendation or me reaching out to someone else. So I kept seeing the need for it. And so I called them back up and I said, hey, I'm going to do it. Are you guys good with this? You can be in, you can be out, whatever you want. And They both wanted to invest, and they're like, you take the reins. We still love the idea. We totally support you. We'll invest, you know, but you've got the more passion and more time to work on it. So that's kind of how, that was our jumping point to really kind of get going on it.
That's fantastic. So cool. So jumping back, for your story, did you have entrepreneurial ambitions as a child, or is this the first kind of business thing you ever worked on? Like, how did you get from point A to point B?
Yeah, it's not the first. It's definitely the farthest that I've taken anything. But when I was thinking about this, you know, as a kid, I wasn't like out there hustling for money. I wasn't, you know, I didn't have like a paper route. I don't even know if I ever did a lemonade stand. However, we did, me and my friend Annie actually created a group fitness class. My backyard pool, when we were in elementary school, we created the A&A workout. It was a half hour class. We had dates and times. Now we were in elementary school. So our parents were like, you cannot market this outside of the household. We were both, she was the youngest of five. I'm the youngest of four. We put up flyers on the refrigerator, you know, sign up for classes. I think it was $1 a class. Nobody signed up. for weeks, but we loved it. So we kept doing it and we're like, people will show up. And then my oldest sister, I guess, just took pity on us. So she signed up for a class and I think she only did like one or two classes. I'm not sure if she even paid, but that was probably my first entrepreneurial venture.
That's fabulous. So I guess, obviously, you know, you're kind of saying like, yeah, it wasn't like a huge part of your childhood, but You went into the workforce. What were you passionate about that got you to kind of to your career path and then ultimately to today?
Yeah, I mean, I've kind of lived different lives here. I graduated from college and I went into the Navy. I was a Nurse Corps officer.
Oh, cool.
I did ROTC in college. So as soon as I graduated, I got commissioned into the Navy. Right. And did 4 years there. Then I decided I wanted to change gears and I went into broadcast journalism, doing the health reporting. So I went back to school for a year and then kind of got sucked into that world, started in a small market, then went to a medium-sized market, and then kind of got my dream job, which was, you know, to come back home and work for the ABC station in Philadelphia. So I've done that. And then this, you know, I have done other things. I did try to get a patent on a piece of medical equipment that I just saw in the hospital that was needed. I was not able to get it. My dad fronted some money for me and in the end, we were not able to get the patent on it.
Patenting is a hard process and so time consuming. So
and it was actually when I was a Navy nurse and I just kept, it was the same thing that was happening with this. I was like, why doesn't this exist? Why doesn't it exist? And we did the original search and nothing turned up. So the lawyer was like, okay, I think we can proceed, which the search was only like $300, but then you spent like several thousand to do the patent process. And then it came back that like, oh, we missed something in the search. There is something that we're not going to be able to patent it. So that was major bummer with that.
It is a really interesting world. We just did an interview with somebody who's an expert in that space. So we'll have to link to that interview in our show notes, but it's a mess. I absolutely understand that.
Yeah. So you went from kind of military to in the nursing space to reporting, and throughout the process, it sounds like you have an eye for kind of gaps in the market, things that don't exist, whether it's a fitness course for young kids or if it's this kind of realization that there are things that we do that is an everyday thing, but there's no good process for it. With that and kind of in the journey, is that something that like you've honed over the years? You've kind of said like, oh, this is something that looks interesting, but no, I'm not going to pursue that. And slowly you found something like now you're like, this is something that makes sense for me.
Maybe a little bit. I will say after trying to get that one patent, I think I was a little bit burned by that. And, you know, I spent a lot of time. I mean, with that, you go through every little detail with the lawyers and, you know, my dad knew it was a risk, but he was like, hey, let's give it a shot, you know, but you spend this money and, you know, then we weren't able to do anything with it. So I was a little bit burned by that. I will say, I don't know when it was, like maybe 10 years ago, a friend of mine was auditioning for Shark Tank. And it was just, so he was a very good friend. And so I helped him, with his audition video. And then Philadelphia had all these kind of like, pitch practice meetings. So I went with him to those and he would practice his pitch. And then we did his business plan. So I've always been kind of interested in it. I don't know why I wasn't like, okay, let me find something. And then I was in the Navy. Obviously that's kind of a corporate type job. And then, working for ABC.
To look at this, this specific market, it's one of those things, you're looking at doing a hardware product, right? Or, some type of patentable thing. There is so much that goes behind that. And here, this is like software. This is something that's a little bit more amorphous, but also something that's a lot easier to pursue. Do you think that was kind of the opening point where you're like, okay, well, at least I'm not going to have to go through all of this spend, all of this work for, nothing. I might be able to build something that could be of some little value, kind of in the comparison between software and that
hardware. Yeah. I don't know if that, honestly, I've learned so much over the past 5 years, and getting, developing an app is really, really difficult if you don't have that. I'm not technical. So for years, we looked high and low and talked to people and tried to find a good fit for a CTO, and we never found that. So we worked with different development companies and different freelancers, and some were great and some were not so great. That has definitely been kind of the biggest challenge with all of this. I will say, I pitched to different accelerator programs and I was accepted and am now working with Sila Labs, which has been an absolute game changer. It's not just mentorship. It's really, you're giving away a lot more equity, but in the same sense, they're coming with an entire team. They're coming with a co-founder who has been down this road several times before. They come with a CTO. They come with someone who has marketing experience, someone who helped with the business, the legal, even going through our name change. They told me, they're like, hey, you might have some names. It was My Faves before. And like, you might have some issues with that. So we started kind of spitballing some new names, and then they started kind of, talking with the legal and figuring out what we could do, which that would have taken me weeks to figure out on my own.
What was that process of like finding an accelerator like? Did you look for a lot of them? You interviewed a lot of them or?
So I pitched to a couple different programs, maybe like a year ago. A couple reached out to me on LinkedIn and, they kind of talked to me, and then I ended up pitching to three recently. I was invited into two and I went with this one.
In that process, there are kind of different experiences for founders as you're, whether it's pitching for venture capital, trying to find different accelerators. Would you say that you pretty much spent all of your time honing and trying to just get into an accelerator? Were you able to do some of the other stuff that you would, wanted to move the product forward? Or was it mostly like for however many months focusing just on that?
Yeah, no, I kept moving it forward. I got to a point that we do have an MVP, and okay. I had set up the beta test on my own. With the help of a freelance developer who I have to say, I just found this guy on Upwork and he was awesome because the app was left in like a state that the beta test could not have been launched. And that developer had told me, oh yeah, it's ready. It was not ready. And so I found this other freelance developer. He was fantastic. He has a full-time job. He didn't want to like come on the team, but he went through and he was like, Allie, he was like, all right. He was like, let's prioritize. He was like, here's the things that you need to do in order to get it, to beta test ready. That's what I did with him. And then that was the time that, some of these startup studios two of them had reached out to me. And that's what kind of got me thinking like, oh, maybe I do want to work with an accelerator program. And I think in the end, it might have been kind of what helped me get with Sila Labs, because I'm coming with an actual product
exactly
that they can build off of.
Yeah. Did you have like users and some experience working with some like with people on the app at that point? Or were you like, I have a product, but we don't really have a user base?
We have about 100 beta testers.
There you go.
I would say I know about 70% of them.
hey, that means there's 30% you don't know.
Yeah, there's a good 30% that just kind of were on our website and signed up and gave us some feedback. So it was helpful.
Yeah, that's a conversation we have a lot with founders of like, I have this idea. I want to get capital or I want to get into an accelerator or something like that. And there are obviously different stages. You know, kind of the what would be quote the incubator is the like, well, you have an idea, but you don't have anything else. Like, come work with us. We'll teach you some things to be able to get there. But ultimately, what a lot of those people are looking for is, you know, what we call traction. It's like you have some users, you have people engaging your product, you've got, even if you don't have a product, it's like you've got people who are so interested in it, they have like prepaid you to like get the thing, right? And so being able to come to an accelerator, to that venture capitalist with traction, it is all the difference. And, you know, maybe that game's a little bit different outside of Silicon Valley. I know a lot of people are like, oh yeah, you can just bring an idea, you know, and you'll get it funded. And it may have been a different era as well, but I know, you know, all the circles I run in, it's a get some traction. That's what's going to get you to that next step. If you don't have any of that, it's going to be very hard to convince someone to you know, take a chance with you.
Very difficult. And I do like, I like the founder of Sila Labs, which now joined with 10X Incubator. That's his whole thing, is that he kind of wants to disrupt the way Silicon Valley does things. Because you're right, unless you're like a former Google exec, you're not even going to get a meeting with someone who's going to, especially not just with an idea. Like that's not going to happen. So he went down this road, and you know, he calls himself a non-tech founder. And he faced many of the same obstacles that I faced, you know, with his own money, but then, you know, was able to figure out a way to bring his product to life. And it was, you know, uber successful. And now he has this, you know, this idea, this incubator to help other non-tech founders kind of launch their product. And I think he says he wants to do 10,000, he wants to launch 10,000 tech companies in 10 years.
Wow. That's a lot.
That's a lot of tech companies.
Yeah.
A lot. It's ambitious.
No, wow. So where are you guys at now? You're in a beta with about 100 users?
We have a beta with about 100 users. Right now, we're on a little bit of a hiatus because now it is back with the development team with Sila Labs. And they're going through, they took kind of all the feedback that we got from our beta testers. And then they brought, you know, fresh eyes because they weren't involved in getting this to the MVP status. So they kind of had their suggestions. And so now they are working on making some of those changes to the app, adding some things in, like you said, that's going to help to build that traction. And then our plan is to relaunch in a few months.
What was that experience like for handing that off to a different development team?
You know what? I'm excited about it. We sat down and I trust this team. Whereas I'll be honest, some of the others, I was kind of like, are they really understanding like what's going on here? And, you know, do they just want to get a paycheck or, but this development company, I mean, they're not going to make money unless we all make money. So, you know, their
motivations are aligned with yours, right?
Yeah.
I think that's a huge piece.
And I like that, you know, they sat down and I gave them like kind of all the feedback that we got from our beta testers, and the CTO is, you know, super smart guy. And he kind of was like, all right, he's like, here's my initial impressions, you know, of the MVP. And I agreed with him, you know, some of the stuff I was like, oh, I didn't think about that. So I like that it has fresh eyes and, you know, they want to make it more user friendly and just kind of enhance it, building off of what we have now.
Yeah. Well, and so let's talk real quick. You know, we also are in the engineering and, you know, product development space. So I think there are a lot of interesting conversations that we have a lot with founders between the, you know, even technical founders who don't do it themselves. You know, they've got a team that, you know, obviously is much more into the app development side of things that they'll have do stuff. But for you, having come without that tech background, do you want to just walk through? You said like you had some experience that was just terrible, some that was like it was good, but it, obviously you're taking this other path. For you, do you think, you know, first off, where you are now is like, do you wish you would have gone there first? Or do you think that, you know, kind of jumping through these different hoops was important? And then also some of the learning that you've had as you've worked with different types of individuals, different people who are, you know, helping you do that. Have you learned anything that you'd kind of either try to avoid next time or something along those lines?
Yeah, it's a really good question. Because there are definitely some decisions that I made that I wish I had not made. But in the same sense, you lose time, you lose money, but you do learn from it. And I will say, because I've been involved with this for so long, when it was time to pitch to these accelerators, I was so kind of crystal clear on the app and, you know, where it is and where it's going and my vision and our target market. I had revamped our pitch deck so many different times. I don't know if I had pitched 3 years before that I would have gotten into them. I've really just kind of learned a lot through the process. In the same sense, some of the lessons I learned, they were hard lessons to learn.
Fantastic. So yeah, what's next? You're about to relaunch. Are you planning on pursuing more of a traditional venture investment strategy, or what's next?
Yeah. So right now we actually just got a investment to make those changes to the app. Oh my God, it's amazing. Friends/angel investors who have invested in, in some of this. And so that is going to help us make those changes. And then the goal is to relaunch in a few months with some marketing and be able to, again, kind of get more feedback and make changes based on that feedback. And then, we have kind of planned out, I have version one right now. We have version two, three, four, five, where I see it going. But obviously, that may change based on some of the feedback that we get. Some of the initial research, when we targeted, down our categories and, one of them didn't make the top six. So we took it out. But then when we did the beta, everybody was like, oh, I'd really like to see that. I was like, oh, we took it out. So I think we'll learn a lot from this next round too. And I'm excited.
So what's your monetization strategy?
Yeah. So it is going to be invite only advertising. So meaning that like a retailer would have to have so many organic mentions on the app. And then they would be invited to advertise. And then they would have to get a premium page. So they would buy a premium page where they get extra features and functions and kind of tap into their loyal customers that way. But users have to opt in or opt out if they want them in their circle or not. The thing that we're really trying to get away from is we do want to do things differently. And we have to, in order for True Faves to be different, it has to be all based on unbiased recommendations. No one's getting a kickback for posting or, adding something to their faves. So it was a struggle kind of figuring out what our revenue strategy was. But we're hoping that this works. And it gives retailers kind of, another way to connect with their loyal customers and giving them kind of more features and functions that, that they can use to tap into them. But it also gives users the way to opt out so that you're not followed around by ads or you're not getting, all these emails, multiple emails every day, kind of trying to put a wall up there and just do things differently than what's happening right now.
Absolutely. I think that's really smart. And I think you're seeing what's coming as far as advertising over the next 5 or 10 years. There's a lot of resistance to traditional ads right now.
Yeah. I mean, now it's like you look at one pair of shoes and those pair of shoes follow you around for the next 2 months.
Yeah, it's like, I already bought that pair of shoes. Why do you keep advertising to me?
Right? I
don't want them at all. Yeah. Yeah. Well, so to talk to kind of the monetization strategy and some background. You know, I got some friends, they've got a location, and it's in Yelp, right? And one of the concerns, you know, that I had, and actually kind of went down a similar path at one point, was the realization that the incentives are different. So Yelp, you know, their whole thing is they need to get the restaurants and locations to have, you know, premium memberships. And, you know, you think at the beginning, it's like, okay, well, as long as we have some, it's good, right? Now what I, and maybe a cautious warning, I don't know whatever the word is when you follow certain paths too far, then what it becomes is what happened to my friends, which is Yelp was like, oh yeah, well, you happen to have a bad review. If you get a premium membership, then you can take off that bad review. And so then the incentives get twisted towards, you know, bad practice. I think what you have is really great because you have some other opportunities around the personal connection point and the reality that it's not as much about having that five-star, everyone has a five-star, you know, everyone sees the five-star review. It's about, hey, these people are promoting between each other privately. And then this is an opportunity for that third party, that business to join into that conversation in a sense, which is different than the, oh, we're going to strong arm you because, you know, you hate having that, you know, negative review. So unless you pay, then, you know, you're not going to be able to, you know, get that best, you know, spot. I think there are some good ways that you can use that interpersonal part versus the, you know, publicized rating approach.
And I think that's the biggest thing that makes us different is that one, you're only posting about the things that you love that are in your faves. And two, you know who is making that recommendation. So when you think about, you know, I have a friend who we have similar taste in books. So I'm always texting her like, hey, what are you reading? Or, you know, I have one friend who she always goes on the most fantastic vacations. Like she seems to always know how to like, you know, where to go and where to stay and which restaurants and kids activities. So I, you know, I always kind of want to know what she's doing. So that's what's going to set us apart from some of the other sites is that you actually know, you know, where this recommendation is coming from. Our tagline is recommendations you'll really love from people you really know.
Yeah, oh, that's good.
Yeah. Like and just looking at, you know, kind of the influencer marketing space, totally kind of different pivot from the like, everyone in the world is doing these ratings and reviews. It's like, no, I'm going to follow this one influencer. They talk about stuff I care about. I really like what they do. And hey, you know, they've got a curated approach to presenting stuff to me. And then, you know, that acts as a filter for what you choose to do and what you choose not to do and what you get and what you don't. But it's that curation that's the differentiator versus the volume. And I think you can use that same approach.
Yeah. I say we're kind of like the anti-influencer because, you know, you're basing this on the people that you actually know in real life who are not getting a kickback. They're genuinely just saying like, hey, I have this, this is one of my favorite spots or my favorite products. And
And people care about that genuineness and the fact that they can trust you. So that's awesome. Would you have any specific like thing over this last couple of years that was like meaningful content or learning that you went to help improve yourself as an entrepreneur or, you know, grow?
I mean, I went down a rabbit hole. You know, when I first started this, you know, you start talking to people and they're like, okay, you got to start with Lean Startup. So started with that. There was another book that I read that was called, The J Curve of Startups, I believe was the name of it. And then I listened to a lot of podcasts. The podcasts, you know, some of them are for inspiration, but like even things like How I Built This. I mean, obviously these are all successful entrepreneurs, but it's not just inspiration. A lot of them have they have good learning lessons that they share with people. You know, talking to people. I think the Philadelphia community has been great. Philly startup leaders, I just kind of networked with a lot of people there. And then 1 Million Cups. Marcus, I think that's how, maybe that's how.
I believe that is. Yeah, I think you were pitching on 1 Million Cups. I love 1 Million Cups and think it's a very valuable place because of exactly what, you know, you talked about is the ability to present and kind of low stakes. So, yeah.
And that was like the second time I had ever kind of presented too.
You did great. So
Thank you. Yeah. But it was good practice. And I felt like everybody had good questions and it led me to, you know, talk to more people and then kind of think deeper about some of the questions that people were asking.
And that's what we hear over and over whenever we ask people this question. It's almost always some version of surround yourself with other people that are doing this, because that's the only way. It's the only way.
Yeah, especially if you don't have a co-founder, right? The ability to have other people to bounce ideas off of and hear feedback from and whatnot is huge.
Yeah, definitely.
Fantastic. Well, as you guys come out of your beta here, and honestly, this episode should be coming out to you, dear listener, around that time. That's probably happened. Woo-hoo, at this point.
Perfect.
So say hello to the future. And what's the best way for listeners and folks to find out more and follow you? And
so right now, because we just went through a name change, our site right now is still getmyfaves.com. So we were still MyFaves. So the email is info@getmyfaves.com. And we'll just kind of reroute that to the truefaves.com because we own that domain. And then I'm on LinkedIn, I'm on Instagram, I'm on Twitter. So people can find me. And if they're interested, you know, they can sign up on the site to become beta testers. We'd love to have a list of early beta testers from when we first launch or relaunch.
Cool. All right. Well, Allie, thank you so much for coming on and telling us more about TrueFaves today. Really appreciated it.
Thank you, guys. Thanks so much for doing this podcast, too. It's super interesting to hear other founders and everybody's journey.
Thanks so much to Allie for coming on the show. It's always fascinating to hear how solo founders are making their way in the lonely world of entrepreneurship. Suggestion? Make friends, even if they decide not to be your business partner. Thanks to all of our listeners. We appreciate every single one of you. If you like the show, let us know by subscribing wherever you listen. Or if you really like it, leave us a review. You can also reach out on Twitter using #FoundersForge. We always love hearing your feedback. If you're interested in being on the show or want to find something we talked about, check out the show notes for all the relevant info. We're always looking for interesting people and companies to talk to. See you next week, and until then, keep up the hard work.